today's going to be a little bit different. We have an individual that is a salesperson, but he's also got some sales processes that he's automated. He has impacted a lot of people's lives. Basically, he's using an experience that he had in another country to really impact how he looks at what he does. Lane, what did you get out of this episode?
Yeah, I was actually blown away by Matt. I think what he's doing is incredible. And I think it's mentioned a couple times throughout the episode, but really what comes to me is just what he's doing is cool, but why he's doing it is so much better.
Yeah. And I think that's what, to me, this episode was about for you as a listener. It's going to be, why are you doing what you're doing? Do you have a clear understanding of why you do what you do? And then how does your mindset fit into the things that you do as a day-to-day salesperson? So let's dive into this interview with Matt. We can't wait to hear what you guys think. So let's get started. All right. Welcome back, everybody, to the Slow Pitch. And today we have a special guest on. And before I get to that, first, I would like to say hello to Lane. How are you doing over there?
Fantastic, Rob. Yourself?
I'm doing well. So our guest today is Matt Boyle. He is from Australia. Matt, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
We should probably start out with a quick, give us a little high level what you do, something so that we can understand what you do and get a good feel for where you come from, what you do.
Yep. So the short version of what we do is we run an outsourced business development center. Our whole kind of mission is to automate and outsource the key parts of the sales process that businesses don't enjoy doing, don't have time to do, and don't do well, like prospecting, follow-up, lead nurture, and all of that type of stuff.
And that's kind of interesting because to me, if you're a salesperson, that's one thing. You should like sales and doing that. But if you're a small business owner and you just don't enjoy doing the sales piece, that's where you would kind of step in, right? That's where you would take over and do those functions that they don't really almost like to do, if you will, or help teach them how to do that, correct?
We build systems. A lot of those tasks like follow-up and prospecting and all of those sort of critical sales tasks that are so important, but they're so time-consuming. But they're also in that important, not urgent bucket. Yet everyone's bucket gets filled with urgency, so they never get time to do enough of it. So we build the systems to enable you to do more of it.
So Matt, to me, it sounds like you're talking about almost a fractional salesperson.
Yep, yeah, that's and building kind of a fractional and an outsourced sort of business development or an SDR team to take care of all of the kind of the repeatable and the time consuming tasks that go into sort of sales.
Yeah, I was just going to say that sounds fairly fascinating to me because as a small business owner, you just don't have time for everything. And as you said, our buckets fill with urgent issues and we don't have time for those important issues.
That's exactly right.
That sounds like an absolutely fascinating thing for me.
Oh, we haven't even got to the best part yet.
So what's the best part?
There's the why we do it, not the what we do. So what we do is world class as far as the systems and all that. Why we do it is actually using job creation as through our outsourcing centers as a way of ending poverty-driven exploitation and sexual slavery and human trafficking.
Let's get into a little bit of that because I think that bakes us way up into how you get into this and why you're here today, correct?
Yep.
So give me a little bit of that story of what happened, where you started out, and how you ended up essentially in Thailand, right? Let's go through that.
Totally. So, okay. So I started off and I was the guy that saw the butterfly flapping its wings. So way back in 2006, 2007, I saw that the internet was changing how people were buying. Previously, they'd used us as the business as the source of market research and product research. Now, all of a sudden, the internet was coming out and that was changing. So I happened to sort of start digging into that and figuring out how to sell products over the internet and run profitable internet departments before anyone else kind of knew they needed to. So I was able to leverage that into a national sales training organization. We focused primarily in the automotive industry. I had four offices around the country, but then I got to meet someone. The guy that I met was an Australian guy that worked with the Thai Immigration Police, and he spent time over in Thailand and he was rescuing girls and rescuing women. And the more we kept talking, the more he kept sharing the stories and the travesties that happen over there, the more I kind of went, I needed to find out more. So it took me about 6 months to convince him to let me come over. You know, this wasn't one of these kind of missionary tours and safe. This was going on the front lines, looking at what he actually did when he was involved in rescuing girls and rescuing women and real life risks and all that stuff. So I ended up spending 3 weeks with him over in Thailand, and we're rescuing kids out of brothels, and we're pulling women off the streets, and just seeing just the depravity, which is exploitation and sexual slavery. And everyone that I spoke to, and a lot of the girls we rescued, and a lot of the girls that we couldn't rescue, I just got talking to, and I just asked them the questions, how did you get caught up in here? And the stories were the same. Everyone got involved in this because they needed money. The scams were different, and the vehicles, they either borrowed money from someone they shouldn't, they took a job that they knew they shouldn't, but it was to provide for their family, or they got promised a job that never existed and then got trapped. So it all came down to just being in a vulnerable position, needing money and becoming exploited. And when I got back to Australia, I just, some of the images couldn't forget them. I couldn't go back to life as it was. So I was sitting in this boardroom a couple of weeks later and training this group of salespeople how to prospect over the internet, how to follow up, how to do all of these things that I knew would make this business hundreds of thousands of dollars. I was also at the same time calculating how much it was costing that business to actually put this training on. And I worked out with my fees and the room hire and everything else like that, the wages for the team, this is costing them $20,000 for the day. Now, wind the clock back a few weeks. When I'm in Thailand, we were rescuing girls and buying their freedom, and it was costing us $1,500 to $2,000 to buy someone's freedom. So I'm sitting here in this boardroom going, this has cost $20,000. That could have been 10, 12 lives that we've saved. And no one in this room is going to be doing anything that I'm training them on as soon as I walk away. They just won't do it because something's always going to be more important. Something's always going to come up. And it just, as soon as the accountability element of what we do stops, it will stop. So it then kind of just dawned on me, well, if I could figure out how to automate and outsource all of these tasks that salespeople don't enjoy doing, don't do well, I could change my business. So instead of businesses paying me to train them for their teams not to do it, they could actually pay me to build the systems to do it for them. They'd make more money. And then I could go create jobs, go help prevent some of these girls from being caught up in this world, help restore those girls once they've been out of that world, and also take the communities that are all vulnerable and actually put foreign money into it through a way of jobs and actually make a big dent in this world. So that's the journey of kind of where everything that we now do started.
So what you do is really important, but why you're doing it becomes very important, because what you're doing is really essentially changing people's lives, right? You're financing people to get out of their situation and their problem. Is that correct?
Absolutely. It's that double-edged sword that as I looked at my vocation and my skill set from there and looked at where my strengths lie was all in building sales systems, sales training, running, you know, these profitable departments through from that. When I looked at where my heart was and what I wanted to do was being able to impact these communities and sort of stop kids and women from being put into these situations. So I went about finding a vehicle to be able to achieve both. And there was an evolution through the journey that, you know, I wanted to be just build this great business and donate money. That was never enough. So when I kind of then evolved that into, well, if I could just create jobs and I can just employ all these girls, that's going to stop them from heading in that world. So now I need to figure out how I can actually create jobs of meaning, jobs of substance, jobs that people are going to fundamentally pay for, because without that kind of commercial transaction, nothing takes place. So then I went about building the systems of, well, how can we actually take a simple sale or a complex sale? And what are the elements of the sale that absolutely have to be done by a person face to face versus what are the other things that we can use technology to leverage our time, leverage a one to many approach, or be able to, you know, do so we can then build systems that we can automate and outsource and have run by these teams, but have them run in a way that unless you intentionally tell someone, no one's going to know, because we don't want someone in Thailand that barely speaks English picking up the phone and ringing prospects and having conversations with customers and that's just never going to work. So we needed to build the systems that are quite sophisticated so they get the same results without doing the same tasks, which took about 2 years to sort of develop and perfect and bring all the pieces together. But now that they do, we run some very complex sales funnels, from hedge funds looking at investors with $1 million to buy in, to business franchises, to consulting, to you name it, we've been able to build systems to execute it and make it happen.
to me, it sounds like you created or built a system so that you could support what you wanted to do, right?
Exactly.
And you're already doing some of these parts already, right, in the system, right?
Look, I had the we had the processes. We were training businesses how to do it. So I was sitting there going, okay, you need to make 10 prospecting calls a day. You need to do 10 nurture calls a day. You need to do this. You need to be able to respond to an inquiry in 30 minutes. You know, so all of this stuff that we you and all the statistics and all the sort of results back up go, for a business that could be hundreds of thousands of dollars in sales. It's all of that it's all of the work that leads to you spending time with qualified prospects.
Yeah. So did Thailand, your experience in Thailand, did that speed up the process of getting everything into place, or how did that tie in?
Well, it made me rethink how I was going about solving that problem. I was training businesses. I was giving them all the systems. I was putting the accountability in place. I was cracking the whip to making sure the sales teams did all these tasks. And then we would come to the end of the engagement and they would stop paying us and they'd say, hey, you've done amazing. This has been great. We've got it from now. And then 30 days later, they're back to where they were because no one was doing the work anymore. So
yeah,
it made me rethink that problem of going, well, if businesses are prepared to pay for a solution, that's a problem that they want to solve. If I can solve it in a better way, that instead of getting their sales teams to be able to do it, we can do it for them so their sales teams spend more time in the areas they enjoy doing, more time talking with qualified prospects and engaged in the sales process and less time following up and prospecting and finding people to sell to, they can actually make more money and they can profit more because of it. And the solution that I'm providing for them is much more sustainable for the long term than a sales training program. It's actually a lifetime solution. And then it just happens to also be able to mean, well, if I could get it to the point where I can train a six-year-old how to run this system, I can train anyone in the world to be able to do it. So I can then choose to go create these jobs in the areas where there's exploitation and poverty and solve that problem at the same time. And then it just so happens to be when I connected all those two and finally got all the pieces together, it turned into be a profitable business that the more businesses we help, the more jobs we create, the more impact we have, and the more impact we have, the more businesses we help. And it's this spiral of benefit that, you know, the more we help, the more we get, the more we help. And it's been amazing.
That probably just feeds itself or compounds on itself, right, over time?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's just that, you know, like, and again, you look at it from a commercial point of view, if you're paying $3,000 a month and getting $30,000 back in sales, it's a pretty easy value proposition to keep paying that $3,000 a month.
Yep.
Now, you look at that from a charity and from a full good thing. If I take that $3,000 and create three jobs out of it, then there's three lives that have been impacted by that, by the ability to be able to do that work. So there's that good over there. And then in the middle, there's the business model and goes, well, it actually provides for my family. It actually gives us profit and all that kind of stuff. So everyone wins, and then it's just that cycle of growth through that comes out from there.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's awesome. That really makes me pause and think, you know, it's like, wow.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I think that's why I wanted Matt to come on, because he has a reason for being now, right? There's a reason for him to do his work now. And while everybody else is out there just doing the work because, well, that's just because this is what I have to do or what I kind of like to do. But now you have somebody here who's literally has a reason to do what he's doing. He's got something internally driving him. He's got his experience driving him. But that speaks volume to people who don't have that versus somebody that does have that. If you don't have it, it almost becomes a detriment to you because you're not driven by something internally. You're always taking external things that have to drive you. So to me, having that extra level of or layer of motivation is a big deal. But there's a mind shift that you have to have to get there. So how did you make a shift from, I want to do what I want to do and it's all about you, to I want to help others? How did you make that shift?
The business was massively profitable before Thailand, but it was horribly unfulfilling. You know, I hated the fact that I knew that these salespeople didn't want me to be there. They thought I was the Antichrist. They thought that I was just wasting their time and taking them away and getting them to do, you know, teaching them how to suck eggs. It was that horrible feeling that I'd rock up every day and go, yes, hey, I'm walking away today with a check for $6,000, $7,000 of my time, and going, man, that's great. but I know that no one wants me to be there and no one wants my help. So I was horribly unfulfilling. And then when I got open to Thailand, it was just, you know, I've got six kids. You know, we had six kids very close together. So as I'm hearing stories about kids that have been exploited and some of the decisions that parents are forced to make about their kids because of money, it just had me going, I can't sit back and do nothing. So there was an evolution of sort of thinking. It wasn't a just one day I'm going on and going, oh, all of a sudden this is my purpose and this is what I need to do. It was a, you know, it was an evolution through. And, you know, the next step was, hey, I just want to start donating money. And then I just, because that was just that the, you know, the Christian in me going, hey, I just want to give as much as I can to this cause.
Yeah. So it sounds like it's a gradual thing then over time, right? It sort of evolved.
It just evolved. And then it went to, well, giving money isn't good enough because I've never got enough and I'm actually giving my mortgage money away. So I've got to make it sustainable to be able to provide for my family. So, you know, then it's going, well, what if I just create jobs and build those systems? So again, it got into that. And then I really got tested as we were going through that kind of phase, because me being a big picture visionary person and not focusing on details, didn't really spend the time to calculate how much it's going to cost to shift business from point A to point B, how long it was going to take, how much money I was spending, and all of that kind of stuff. So in this transition, we ended up losing our house. We lost our cars. We lost everything. And, you know, we went through absolute total financial catastrophe, like a nuclear explosion. It was horrendous. And there was these moments as we're going through all of that I would sit at this lookout and just meditate and pray and just go, what am I doing? And the words that kept coming through to me through that phase were, if you quit now, everything you've been through is for nothing. But if you keep going, it will work itself out. And so that was through that, it was like that test of how badly do you want this course? How much do you believe in this mission? You know, from there. But there was also the reality of, if I quit and went back and got a job, that actually wouldn't provide my family's needs. I was stuck literally between a rock and a hard place, that we're in financial disaster. And if I quit, which is the logical choice, we're going to stay in financial disaster. But if I keep going, we could stay in financial disaster. It could work itself out. So I had to build that kind of resilience through it, and that commitment of, no, screw it, I'm just going to keep plowing forward. So now the person you're talking to is someone that over that 4 years has been able to double my business three times, has been able to grow it exponentially, wow, has been able to make back everything we lost and then some in a very short amount of time. And 4.5 years after we went through that financial catastrophe, and I'm sitting praying at that lookout, I ended up buying the house next to the lookout. You know, the person you're talking now, the conviction that I come with behind what I do hasn't always existed. It's been that fake it till you make it and just keep plowing forward. And it just, you know, the more I kept kind of doing it, the more I kept being able to prove to myself that, hey, I can actually make this happen. And every kind of little victory build that confidence to the point that now when I walk into any sales environment, if I'm going to get a, you know, going to acquire a new client, I have that absolute conviction that I can help them.
Can we talk a little bit about the mindset piece? Because the person that we're talking to today obviously is different than several months or years ago. How does one or a salesperson make that leap and have the confidence that you have now that you didn't have way back then?
Confidence for me comes from overcoming the adversity. Like, so my state of certainty exists because I know I've been at the bottom of the pit and I've been at the bottom of the barrel, and I've been in that situation where I had two choices to recover. I could sell my way out or I could steal my way out. And I didn't want to steal anything, so I knew I had to go sell to get out.
Probably good.
So being in that situation where it is sell or starve, I've been able to get out there and do it. So that belief and that results of going, hey, I've been there, done it, and got it, is where the conviction comes from. Where that starts before you've actually been there and done that, and when you're sitting in that bottom of that pit and going, hey, I'm in that situation where I said, I don't know how I'm getting out of it. For me, it was always a combination of carrot and stick, you know, running away from something and running towards something. I used both the fear of failure and the fear of starving as a as a motivator and go, hey, I don't want that to happen, so I'm going to run away and do everything I can to avoid that happening. And it was also then that kind of the chase of the goal and the chase of the hunt and go, well, if I get successful and if I make this sale, we're going to go have a steak dinner. We're going to have this. We're going to, you know, be able to, you know, feast. So it was that, you know, for me, it was always that kind of, I couldn't find if I was just driven by fear, I would get paralyzed. If I was just driven by greed and goals, I wouldn't do all of the work. I would just kind of focus on the sexy part. So I had to maintain that kind of, that duality of running away from what I didn't want to happen while running towards what I did want to happen.
That's interesting because I've heard a lot of very successful people talk about that fear of losing it again or losing it or going back to where they were. That's a big motivator in that you can't just run on fear, or most people can't run just on fear alone. So your combination of you don't want to be there again, but I also know that I want to go after the big goal that I have and where I want to go. That's a deadly combination for somebody that's trying to stop you from being a salesperson or a small business owner. That's a big deal. I just feel like that's a really difficult thing to stop. If you're trying to prevent losing everything you have again, and you're driven by something that's just internally motivating you because of your experience and where you were, that's a deadly combination. And it sounds like you came out of all of those experiences with this feeling of, I don't want to go back to where I was. I have something that I've experienced that's moved me, and I want to change something else that's bigger than me.
Totally. Look, the vision grew for me, that when it went beyond me and went, oh, I've got to impact these lives and, you know, and be able to improve these lives and change that, all that really did was just expand my vision. You know, instead of needing enough money to be able to provide for my family and live a comfortable life, I needed to be able to now create all these jobs and be able to build the sustainability in that. So all that did is just lift my eyes to something that was bigger than what I thought. And once I eventually kind of accepted that as something that's achievable and something that I could do, I was able to kind of expand it and I was able to grow it. And then, you know, the going through the disaster and losing everything and the journey liberated from that fears, because it kind of went, well, I've been through the worst that could happen. You know, I've lost everything. I've got down to $50 in our bank account. I was still able to put food on the table every week. Yeah, we had to move into a rental. Yeah, we had to do some, you know, some moves to get back financially, but we got back financially in a couple of years. So that fear doesn't exist in me anymore. But back then it did.
Sure. And I think that's what people need to understand. It's the fear itself is one thing, but it's not the only thing. There's some other important elements that go into that. I think it kind of ties into what Lane and I have spoken about before and goal setting and how we set goals and what we should be setting goals, that as a salesperson, you have your own corporate goals that you have to meet, and there's reasons for what they have for goals. But then you need to have something of your own type of goal so that you're internally motivated to do what you need to do to get what you want out of these goals as well. And you have to incorporate those things into your goals and into your numbers, or otherwise you're never going to make it there. Like, for example, when I was first starting out in sales, one of the things I did was like, okay, I need to hit these numbers so that we can break even. And what I didn't think about was, well, you know, to payroll taxes, this much extra, or there's more that I wanted to do. Like, what if my car breaks down? The car will break down at the most inopportune time and when I don't have the cash, right? So as a salesperson, I should be incorporating in, what is the things that may come up? What are things that could go wrong? What are extra things that I want? What am I saving for? How am I building my savings? All that extra in and above itself of what your goal actually is to break even in your business, or what the business is setting for you, the corporate office is setting for you. You have to figure out what your goal is relative to all the things that are important to you as well as the corporation. And Matt, you had at some point in time talked about fear and the fear that you've had where it stopped you dead in your tracks. Do you remember what that felt like, what that was like, and when that happened? Do you remember that? And what was that like?
Oh, I certainly had moments of just being paralyzed, and, you know, it was at the point, it used to take me 45 minutes to build up the confidence to make one cold call, because I was so paralyzed by that fear, and I was so sort of, you know, just stuck in it, you know. But the 45 minutes, me doing that hard work, was I was watching videos, I was pumping myself up, I was getting myself in that in that state. That was driven by the goal. That was driven by what I was running towards. And for me, the why has always been more important than the what. So whenever I've been if I'm looking at goal setting, the what I want to achieve is the simple part. I need X in sales, you know, Y in profit. The how, then I break that down into my activities of going, well, if I want to earn $100,000 in commissions, then I need to make, you know, $500,000 worth of sales, which is, you know, $10,000-$50,000 sales, which is, you know, means I need to have 60 qualified leads, which means I need to have 300 prospects. And I'll break it down into that, because the goal without a plan can't be, you know, it's impossible to be achieved. It's a dream. But then having the why, so why am I doing this, is the glue that holds everything together. And that's where the running away from something and running towards something keeps it there, because the most people, when they get into a plan, when it gets hard, they change course. If it's not going the way they want, day one, week one, month one, they'll go and change course, and they'll go, oh, that's it, I'm yep. done.
Like a shiny ball syndrome.
Onto a different plan.
Yep.
When, for me, when I was going through this kind of rebuilding, having this kind of dual purpose of, I need to fix the mistakes that I've made. I need to make sure my family's, everything that my family's lost or I've lost for my family, I get it back. And I still need to be able to create jobs. That why, that having that big, strong motivator behind me. Man, right, I'll do the 18-hour days. I'll sit there and I'll make the calls. I'll do all the outreach. I'll follow the plan perfectly, and I'll put the work in to get the results that I need out of it. And that's probably, for me, the thing that got me, you know, got me where I am today from where I was a few years ago as quickly was going, right, I just outworked everyone. I just, you know, most people would say it'd take you 10 years to get back where it was. Well, I did it in 4 because I worked 3 times as much. I literally worked 16, 18-hour days, you know, working across multiple time zones. And that's how I did it. I worked in the US time zone. I worked in the Australia time zone. I worked in the UK time zone. So I could have 18 hours a day worth of prospects to go and sell to.
Well, that's interesting too, because some people, that's not something people think of. Like, I'm working in my day clock, whereas you're looking at it as, I have a whole world in front of me. Where do people need what I'm selling right now during this time of the day? Who needs that right now? I hadn't really considered that. That's interesting.
That's what this internet thing does. The fact that, you know, we're on the other side of the world and we're having this great conversation now.
Yes.
Opens that possibilities up and all that kind of stuff. And that was just me going, hey, I've just got to, you know, I can't go sell at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
To someone in Australia, but at 3 o'clock in the morning, Australia is lunchtime in the United States. So guess what? I'm opening the United States market up. Hmm. I can't go sell at 8 o'clock at night because everyone's having dinner here in Australia. But in the UK, for me, that's 10 o'clock in the morning. So I can hit the US in the morning. I can hit Australia during the day. I can hit the UK in the evening and hit those markets. And lo and behold, I look now and go, geez, I've got this global business.
That's very interesting. Yeah.
And that, which when I was driven by this, how I need to create jobs, I hadn't considered that that was what would actually be required to achieve it. It just happens to be this nice accident that, you know, that has come out of all of this work. But it was literally that I need, you know, and it started off in that kind of, you know, sell or starve mode of going, man, I need to go make a sale to be able to put food on the table this week. And if I couldn't get Australia, I'd hit the UK, and I just started from that.
Yeah. Did you have that idea or thought before the pandemic? Or like I think...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I feel like a lot of people didn't have that understanding during the pandemic when it first started. They didn't get that concept until after everything started.
Yeah. This is way back in sort of 2016, 2017, when we're kind of going through this, that I started down this journey. And then the pandemic coming, is like all of a sudden everyone's going, oh, there's this thing called Zoom and we can do business through Zoom. And I'm like,
okay, yeah. Because I think a lot of people didn't have that realization that you can talk to anybody anywhere until the pandemic, or they didn't get that concept. I mean, they understand it, but I don't think everybody thought of it. Lane, did you have a question?
No, I was just going to say, it sounds like you realized you needed three of yourself, and so you became three of yourself.
Oh, literally.
Through amazingly hard work, yes.
Yeah, and it was, you know, a consequence, I ended up getting up to put on a stack of weight during it because I would be sedentary for 18 hours a day. So I'm now a fair way through that kind of weight loss journey and have found another passion now. So I do a lot of strongman training now as kind of a way of balancing the workout. But yeah, I literally needed three of me, worked for three of me, and probably grew physically to the size that I was three of me at my heaviest. So
that sounds like me through the pandemic, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because I had somebody tell me one time that you can't do a phenomenal job at being in sales and keeping yourself at really being very, really healthy at the same time, because you're either out dealing with people, doing the networking, going and having little snacks and drinks and all the stuff after work, but it's taking up your exercise time. And then you can go back to the exercise time, but you're doing less of the other networking stuff. And it's you got to sway back and forth. So you take care of yourself for a chunk of time, 2-3 weeks, and then you go back to the other, which is not so much taking care of yourself.
I had to sort of take a step back and eventually suck my own medicine of going, well, I'm teaching people leverage. I'm teaching people how to use outsourcing and automation to do more of the non-voice stuff and the stuff. So I had to kind of just sit there and go,
yeah,
I'm working so hard and I'm in that tunnel vision of this is what I'm doing. If I don't change course, I'm going to die, because I was that heavy that I was, every risk factor was just miles off the chart.
Yep.
So I went, what if I just do for myself what I tell everyone else to do and help them and get paid very well to do? So I built the system. So I now get to train every day. When I'm finished this recording, I'm heading off for another heavy strongman session, and that's the fifth session this week, and then I'm coming back. Why? Because I've got my team now doing all of the time consuming tasks of prospecting and reaching out and following up and stuff. So I have my pool of engaged prospects that already know who I am, know what I do, want what I've got, and we're just working through the details of how to give them what they got. And I do that in a couple of hours a day now. I then run my business in a couple of hours a day. And then I go do interviews and talk to great people like this a couple of hours a day. And then I go to the gym and work out for a couple of days. So it's, again, it's an evolution. It's not an all or nothing. And it's not a turn the light switch on and you get it there. But if you stick with it and stick with the kind of that I live in this and world where I can have a successful sales career and have my health and fitness, eventually you get to this place where you get to do both. So
yeah, and that is true. Once you get to a point, it makes it a lot easier than it is when you just get started as a salesperson. That's exactly what it's like. It's either one or the other for a little while until you figure out, okay, I've got this, I can get done automatically. I can do this without me. They can do this for me. That's not an easy thing to recognize until you're in it for a little while. And then I should not be, you know, sometimes you figure out I shouldn't be doing this.
I was in it until my fat clothes didn't fit anymore. You know, I had the clothes that I bought. I then went and got the bigger clothes. And then when they didn't fit anymore, and I'm going, I'm going to be Homer in a Moo Moo suit if I don't change anything. You know, and that was just like not from laziness. It was just from being so single-minded on the focus and sacrificing myself for the goal. And I went, well, I can't do more if I'm dead. You know, I can't build, I can't impact these lives, I can't serve everyone that needs to be served if I'm critically ill. And yeah, if I don't change directions, I will. So, you know, again, I tell everyone, you don't have to do what I've done to get where I am. If you kind of just sit there and can learn, you can take it through. So I'd always sit there and go, you have to start in that and world and go, I want to do this and this. And then go and then be committed to both causes. And then you'll figure out a way. If one of them is a maybe, and one of them is a I'd like to, or that would be nice, and not that it absolutely must happen, you then go in that sacrifice one for the other. But if you maintain that kind of positioning and internally of going, no, I am going to build this great sales career. I'm going to make all the money that I need to make, and I'm going to do it while being healthy, happy, and having great relationships, and watching my kids grow up, and all those kind of other, you know, those other things. You can absolutely do both.
No question. So I was going to ask you, is there one tip that you would give to a new salesperson or a new business owner that kind of needs to do the sales and run the business? Is there anything you could think of that if I was starting over again, What, based on what you've learned, what advice would you give?
I would take really good stock of my time, because time is the most precious asset in anyone's life. And I would look very hardly at all the things that I was doing and all the things that were taking time away and not working towards one of the goals that I had. And I would either eliminate it or I would find someone else to do it for me. I would be really focused on what is the best use of my time in accordance with the goals that I've got, and be hyper vigilant, hyper disciplined on that. That's, you know, without a doubt, that's the one thing that I said, I still am perfecting it. I'm still not where I need to be at it. But that is certainly the one thing that has had the biggest impact on me.
Yeah, and a lot of people have a hard time doing that because it costs money.
Yep.
And I think the key becomes, at least in my experience, okay, I have to look at my time as a certain number of dollars per hour. And if it takes me more than an hour to do this, it's probably something I should have somebody else do for me, so I can do something else to make that money back.
It's the hardest number to measure from a sales point of view is how much money have we actually missed out on by not doing what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
Because you can't measure that. Accountants are great at measuring the money once it's come in.
Yep.
But there's that thing, and the stats are phenomenal that lost sales from poorly handled lead flow and sales processes, it's a $2.4 trillion a year problem. And you know, that was calculated through a combination. They researched over a million online inquiries over a dozen different kind of major sort of portal sites. And work, you know, calculated through that over 60% of those leads were never contacted by the business.
Wow.
And all that stuff. So it's a massive problem that no one really kind of takes the time to consider. But when you sit there and go, well, if I'm spending 10% of my time with a highly engaged prospects, and that leads to X amount of sales every month, if I can just spend 20% of my time with highly qualified prospects, then there's no reason why that shouldn't be 2x worth of income. If I spend 30% of my time, there's no reason why it shouldn't be 3x. The next layer of question goes down to then, how do I go about doing that? And that's where you really start looking at, okay, well, what are the tasks that, you know, what are the reasons why I'm only spending 10% of the time? What are the tasks that are taking my time that could be done in a different way, could be eliminated, I could get someone else to do it, I could automate it, I could outsource it to do? Or conversely, then how can I just get someone to go find me more qualified prospects and do that? You can then start to create a framework that can work for you, that enables you to go from 10% of your time to 15 to 20 to 25 to 30 and step it up. But when you just take that step back and just think about it logically, the numbers start to sort of make sense pretty quickly. So that's where, you know, mindset is key in kind of looking at it from that possibility framework of, hey, this could, you know, how can I do it? You know, and becoming curious about what the solutions could look like rather than fixed in the, no, I can't afford it, so I have to do it myself. So, you know, it's easy to sit here and talk about it. It's a heck of a lot harder to do it, especially when you're in the moment, but it is totally worthwhile doing because you can have it all.
Yeah, and along those lines, it's difficult to pull the trigger. But I think if you have a partner or somebody or a complementary business that you can talk to, ask questions to kind of get some ideas, or how did you guys deal with that? That makes a big difference. You know, one of the things I always like to try to do is become friends with somebody that's just a little further ahead of you. Because when you come into a situation, you can always call them up and go, hey, what did you do with this? And they go, oh, you just do this, because they've been through it 3 or 4 times already. And then there's times where you hear them say stuff and you're like, I don't know that I can do that right now. But when the financials all make sense and you see the situation present itself, you know what to do because of that conversation.
There's always that physical restraint of you need to physically have the money to be able to pay to get it done.
Yep.
When you're dealing with sales and looking at what we do, it is going, oh, I'm handing over hard cash now for potential future benefit, and I won't take a client on if going, right, this first month's fee, you know, consulting fees, has to deliver a 3x return in month one or I'm broke. That's too much pressure for that time. So, you know, when I get those, it's like, here's some videos I've got, here's some stuff, go and do this on your own, you know, and get started there. The beautiful thing, we have this thing called Google and we have this thing called YouTube. You can figure just about everything out on how to do it. What I found though is when I actually just started looking at my time, all of a sudden, without spending any money, I was able to eliminate 20% of my stuff straight away by just using a Pomodoro counter, which I don't know if you've ever used Pomodoro time management, but it's 25 minutes, 5 minutes break, 25 minutes, 5 minutes break. Just putting a Pomodoro timer on my browser, it massively increased my efficiency because I was like, I've got to get this work done in 25 minutes rather than I'll get it done. So instead of taking 40 minutes, it's now taking 25 minutes. Those couple of things freed up so much time without costing me a cent, which then I used to go make more sales, which then I was able to take some of that money and then go divert it into getting other people to do it.
Maybe not a question you want to answer, but I'm just curious how many lives you've actually impacted through your efforts.
Nowhere near enough yet. We're still at the growth phase there. So our team's at about 15 at the moment. Our goal is to kind of basically double that every 6 months.
Wow, that's amazing.
And that, so I've got the goal that over the next 10 years, I want to create 10,000 jobs. So that's where I'm going. And that's what's driving me to kind of drive forward. But the amount of people we've got, you know, point for us is that there's the flow on effect, but then there's the, when I was over in Thailand, the lives that we saved, you know, the lives that we rescued over there. So it's, yeah, the answer, and you go talk to, and I said, there's a lot of people that have done a heck of a lot more than I have in this space. And you ask them the same question and the answer is always the same, not enough.
No, I applaud that. That's still nothing to sneeze at, though. So, I mean, you've done more than I have. So, I give you a lot of credit for that. It's something that I would have never thought of it.
Hey, just put it in a perspective, Lane. He's already working on tomorrow, and we're still working on today. So, he's way ahead of us.
Yeah, exactly.
Friday is starting off great, I can tell you that.
I was going to ask you, how does my day look tomorrow? Is it going to go okay?
Or? Look, it's starting off great. I'm hoping the rain holds off for long enough, good. But... other than that, we
can
good.
Can you tell me the lottery numbers for today? I mean, for tomorrow?
No, because I've never lost any money on the lottery or any money on the pokies because I've never bought a ticket.
Yeah, that's the smartest way to go, I think. All right, I think we're coming to the end here, Matt. But and you know, Lane's right. You've done some really incredible stuff. You're helping a lot of people, and it's pretty cool. I mean, you're impacting actual lives for the better. I mean, their lives are better because of what you do. So we applaud you for that as well. We would love it if you would follow up with us someday in the future. You know, when you get to helping 10,000 people, we don't care if it's next year or 5 years. We'd love it if you just reach back out to us and let us know. We'd love to hear that. Also, if people wanted to get a hold of you, how would want people to do that? What would be the best way for people to get a hold of you? I think you said LinkedIn.
Yeah, look, LinkedIn. I've also got a little sales scorecard that I've put together that's a great way of being able to sort of just ask some questions about what could be done. So if you want to check that out, that I'll send you the link, but it is thesalesgrowthscorecard.com. You can go check that out. It's a free resource, yep. and we'll give you some kind of good insights as well.
See that website again?
thesalesgrowthscorecard.com.
Cool. Perfect. I truly appreciate your time. I really appreciate what you're doing. And I really appreciate your time that you joined with us today. And we hope that our listeners are able to get something out of it. We hope you find it useful. We're trying to bring content that is a little different, but helps you understand some things in life that will bring more value to your sales life. And if we can get some other experiences that are different than even just ours, we're going to do that. Thank you so much for joining us. So until next time, slow down and close more.
Thank you for listening to The Slow Pitch. Do you have a question about sales? Call or text your question at 608-708-SLOW. That's 608-708-7569. Or you can email them to questions@theslowpitch.com. Slow down and close more.
Thanks as always for listening today. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review. We really appreciate it. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at The Slow Pitch. We were mixed today, as always, by Johnny Polakis, and we were produced by High Gravity Studios. Music credits and other notes are in the show notes section on theslowpitch.com, and we'll be back with another episode soon.